Hey everybody, I'm Scott. It's fundraising time again at antiwar.com. We need your help, and here's how you can help. Stop by antiwar.com/donate or call Angela Keaton, our development director, at 323-512-7095. That's 323-512-7095, or you can shoot her an email over to akeaton@antiwar.com.
Thank you very much for your support.
This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFK. If you're not already a member, consider joining with us and keep free speech alive.
All right, y'all, welcome to the show. It is Anti-War Radio here on Pacifica, 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. I'm sorry you're stuck in traffic out there in the rain like I was on the way here, but I hope to give you a chance to get informed about some of the most important things going on in the world while you're sitting there staring at brake lights. I am Scott Horton. We're here every Friday from 6:30 to 7 o'clock Pacific time. And at antiwar.com this week, we've been covering revolutions and, well, at least massive protests from Morocco to Malaysia. The entire Muslim world is being turned upside down. The American empire is wetting its pants. And it was 1 week ago that the people of Egypt successfully drove Hosni Mubarak, their dictator of 30 years, from power. And today in Tahrir Square was a massive celebration of hundreds of thousands of people. On my other radio show earlier today, I interviewed a reporter named Joe Loria, who some of you may know from the Sunday Times of London and the Huffington Post and a few other places, who was there one half a block off of Tahrir Square. And we could hear the madness, the celebration, fireworks going off and people cheering and like the biggest concert in the background. It was a very exciting thing. And now to follow up a bit on that story, the 1 week celebration of the end of the regime of Hosni Mubarak is Adam Morrow. He's a reporter for Interpress Service, and you might remember we interviewed his friend Ahmad Elassi on the show here last week, and he is joining us now from Cairo. Welcome to the show, Adam. How are you?
Hey, good, Scott. Good to talk to you again.
Well, I'm very happy to have you on the show here tonight. So, were you in Tahrir Square earlier today witnessing all these insane festivities?
I was not in Tahrir Square, but I was in contact with several people who were right in the middle of Tahrir Square.
Right on.
So, yeah, and it sounded like, from what I understand, I know there are always conflicting reports regarding numbers, but I heard that it was as big as it ever was today, that it was past the million-man mark, for what it's worth. You hear different numbers from different places. But I heard it was just as packed as it was in during the biggest demonstrations more than a week ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was tuned into Al Jazeera English's live stream online earlier today, and the numbers look no less impressive to me from a week ago.
Standing
and that would have been a million plus there.
Standing room only. The people that I knew left very early in the morning and couldn't even make it into the actual square. They were in sort of some of the streets adjacent to the square, all of which were packed, standing room only.
Well, I got to tell you, Adam, it's my view. There is nothing more beautiful than to see the kind of revolution that we've seen in Egypt. It's not often that a state falls at all, but to see a state fall after 3 weeks of determined, peaceful protest, it's not a green revolution for Islam or a red revolution for Marxism or anything. It's simply a bottom-up revolution of people demanding liberty. And it worked. And the precedent set, obviously in the Muslim world has taken immediate effect. As I was saying, from Morocco to Malaysia, there have been protests. But really, I think in the hearts and minds of men and women all over this world, it can be done.
Right. Well, what you said about it having no particular political or religious orientation is definitely true. It hasn't morphed into a Iranian-style Islamic revolution, as a lot of the Western media tried to portray it. It hasn't been co-opted by any particular political party. It still very much remains a broad-based grassroots movement. That said, though, I think your listeners should be aware that it's not really as simple as that. There isn't that we can't really say that there's an entirely new regime in Egypt yet. This story hasn't really ended yet. As you know, when I spoke to you a week ago, Mubarak had just handed power or delegated executive power to the military here. And in the week that's passed, and the week since then, the military has, the Supreme Armed Forces Council here, has granted or has met several of the demands of the, several of the primary demands that the protesters had always called for from the very beginning. That includes a suspension of the national constitution, as well as the dissolution of both houses of parliament, both of which were demands of the long-standing demands of the opposition. However, there are still several things that the military has not, several demands of protesters' demands that the military has not met yet, and that is sort of becoming a cause of concern a little bit for some of the, a lot of the people in the revolutionary movement. Some of those demands that still haven't been met, for example, are the emergency law. Egypt's long-standing emergency law, I think I might have mentioned it last week to you, has been in force for 30 years. For the entire duration of Mubarak's regime, the emergency law has been in force. And this emergency law technically forbids people, more than five people, from getting together without the permission of the state, technically. So it's a very draconian law, and it still remains in effect. The military has not unilaterally canceled it, which a lot of people were asking for. What else? There's still the issue of people who were arrested during the demonstrations, and there are hundreds of people that are thought to have been arrested, and there are several people who remain unaccounted for. And this is one thing that the opposition is also calling for. They're calling for a blanket release of everybody that was arrested during the demonstrations, and they're also calling for the release of political prisoners that have been languishing in jails for years on end. Neither of these requests or demands have been met yet by the military. And thirdly, and possibly most importantly, much of the Mubarak government still remains in place. All of the ministers that we have currently, even the new ones, are all Mubarak appointees. And this is something that the opposition is not happy with. The opposition would like to see an entirely new government come in. They'd like to see all of these figures that are still associated with Mubarak and his circle. They would like to see them out, and they would like to see them replaced with brand new ministers and officials. Mm-hmm. And that also hasn't happened yet.
All right. Now, one of the big questions. You know, the military has said that they'll hold elections soon, although that still, I think, means within 6 months. And then there's I've been made aware, it was actually Joe Lorre on the show earlier said, there's a bit of a debate as to whether they should keep a constitutional presidency or try to work on creating a brand new parliamentary system, and that already seems to be splitting the opposition in a couple of ways. Can you comment on that?
Okay. I haven't heard that specifically. What I do know is that I think it was on Tuesday the military had said it had appointed a small council of legal experts who were mandated with amending six or more constitutional amendments, all of which have to do with the electoral process and presidential term limits. They were within 10 days they are supposed to have drafted new amendment or new constitutional articles. And those articles are then supposed to be put before a national referendum within the next 2 months. That's what they said. And as far as I know, people have been broadly happy with that. However, there have also been some dissenting voices who have voiced displeasure with the choice of the people on this constitutional panel. The constitutional panel apparently is eight members, two of whom are from the Muslim Brotherhood, and other ones are various political affiliations. I know people are complaining that I don't think there's a Coptic Christian on the committee. I know women's groups are complaining that there's no woman on the committee. So this has sort of become, as far as I can tell, this has sort of become a bit of a bone of contention.
Mm. Well, political parties have basically been banned, anyone trying to compete with the National Democratic Party there this whole time. So there's a real big question, right, as to whether these different opposition groups that have worked together to overthrow Mubarak are going to be able to form effective political parties, you know, that have the organization and capability to get themselves elected, assuming the military does let them have their elections, right? Assuming they can figure out a process for them.
Right. A very interesting thing about Egyptian politics before this uprising was they do have legal opposition parties. They are allowed to have, and there were a handful of maybe a dozen or more opposition parties that were allowed to operate in the political arena. However, all of those parties were always generally suspected. None of them enjoyed much popular support, and many of them were suspected of really being just arms of the regime. Their function basically was to provide the appearance of plurality and a multi-party system, when in fact they actually weren't representing the people at all, and they were ultimately, at the end of the day, it's suspected probably rightly that they were all taking their orders from the regime, and that they never actually represented any sort of real opposition, that they were just there in order to allow the ruling party to say, look, we have a competitive political system in which we have a multi-party system, when in fact it was just the illusion of diversity.
Right, like in the United States.
An interesting knock-on effect of this recent uprising was that it had the effect of outing a lot of groups that were always loyal to the regime, even if they pretended to oppose it. And all of those legal parties that I just mentioned, all of these legal opposition parties that they had, these licensed opposition parties, all of them ended up showing their true colors during the course of the uprising, when most of their leaders urged demonstrators to go back home and to accept Mubarak's concessions. When the people rejected that, the people wanted more. But these long-standing opposition parties, the Nasserist Party, the Tegemwa Party, the Waft Party, these historical opposition parties in Egypt, all were sort of exposed for really just being arms of the regime. That being said, the Muslim Brotherhood is not a political party. It was never granted a political party license, so that remains banned. Muslim Brotherhood has always been banned for the last 30 plus years.
Well, you know, all these images, Adam, that we've seen coming over the TV the past few weeks have been mostly, I know it's been very broad based, multi-class and every age group and all that, but it seems like the leadership has been, the April 6th movement and these young tech savvy, secularist type, little D Democrats. Do they have even the shell of an old party that they can sort of take over and reform, or any kind of ability to really participate in the system? I just, especially after seeing the celebration today, a week later, that many strong, that many hundreds of thousands of people out in the street, maybe more than a million, it seems like these people really want to keep their hard-won gains, but, you know, they have to be able to participate in the process in order to keep them, right?
Right. Well, these groups definitely had a role probably a leading role, from what I can understand, in starting this thing, in setting the thing off on the 25th, which, if you'll recall, January 25th, was actually its original demands on January 25th. That was originally a demonstration against police abuses and spiraling inflation and socioeconomic grievances. The demonstrators on 25th January were not calling for the fall of the regime. That only evolved over the course of the next couple of days. But the very first thing, that very first big push on Tahrir Square on 25th January, I think it was a Tuesday, the day of the original day of anger, was not a call for regime change. This came later. But I think for the most part you can give these, as you describe them, these young tech savvy sort of secular oriented youth groups definitely played a leading role in that. However, I think it's a mistake to say that they are spearheading the entire uprising. They were basically joined later on in the days that followed. They were basically joined by the rank and file Egyptians, many of whom aren't necessarily young. We're talking about guys in their 40s and 50s who simply whose whose paychecks simply won't get them through the month, or they won't provide enough for them and their families, and a lot of people that were just fed up with the economic status quo came out as well. So you might consider them the vanguard or the sort of spearhead of the uprising, but I think it's a mistake to overlook the part played in average Egyptians, and who I said aren't necessarily all young people. If you walk to Tahrir, you would see people of old ages, from the very young to the very, very old. I wouldn't say that the young people have a monopoly on this thing. The diversity goes with age and as well as class.
I guess what I'm trying to get to is the people who are the revolutionaries, young or old, who are not, you know, part of the Muslim Brotherhood, they're not tied to any of these kind of faux political parties that you were describing earlier, these people who've been left out this whole time, which is why they were the ones who came together and rose up and overthrew Mubarak, are they going to be able to have political parties? It seems like this whole movement is so broad that it has very little real leadership. And, of course, the worry is that Suleiman will, you know, rig his own election in 6 months, or, you know, that kind of thing, right? That the people won't be able to keep their revolution. So that's what I'm trying to explore,
right,
is, you know, the ability, right, of the Egyptians to carry on what they've accomplished so far.
Right, right. Well, to answer an earlier question of yours, I don't think there's any pre-existing structure that these young people will be able to step into. I think they will create new political parties, and I think that this is one of the promises that the military council has made, is that within 6 months enough constitutional amendments will have been made to allow for free and fair parliamentary and presidential elections that are overseen by international or judicial monitors. So I think the idea is, and I know the Muslim Brotherhood now is talking about has their own party in the works. They're getting ready to launch their own political party. So I'm, in fact, there have been several. There have actually their NDP, the National Democratic Party, which was Mubarak's party, a bunch of them have left and are now themselves jumping on the bandwagon and say they're going to create a new their own party. So I think you're going to see an explosion of political parties being created in the coming months.
Great.
In advance of parliamentary and presidential elections.
Mm-hmm. It's Adam Morrow from IPS News joining us from Cairo on Anti-War Radio. And for those of you who didn't see the pictures today, there was another massive demonstration, this time just really a celebration in Liberation Square, Tahrir Square there in Cairo. And I wonder, Adam, whether you think that could be interpreted not just as a big party, but also as a warning to the people left standing inside the government that what was said was meant, and that they're not going anywhere.
That's a really great question. That's the question to the answer that the point I wanted to make is that it wasn't just a sort of party. It wasn't just it was originally, I think they were originally calling it a Yom al-Intisar, or a Day of Victory sort of party, a victory party, and then it sort of became a commemoration for the fallen and the martyrs that had the 350 plus martyrs that died during the course of this. It was going to be, you know, a sort of day of remembrance for them. In the last couple of days and finally today, it took on the overtones similarly to what you just mentioned. Definitely a show of force. Or muscle flexing, just to remind the incumbent government that they are still able to mobilize millions, and that they did reiterate their demands. There's still things that are they want everybody out. Like I said earlier, they want all traces of the former government gone, and I think there's quite a bit of discontent about that. About a lot of the old faces that were associated with some of the most destructive and foolhardy policies of the Mubarak regime are still in place. You have a very unpopular petroleum minister who's still there. I believe the foreign minister is still around. Foreign Minister Abdulhafid is still there, and these are the guys that were responsible for some of the least popular policies. Certainly in terms of foreign policies, in terms of Israel and Palestine and Iraq and things like this. I mean, especially the foreign minister, this was seen very much as an American stooge, you know, kowtowing to Washington and slavishly following American foreign policy. And he's still there. So people aren't happy about that. So yes, to answer your question, today definitely did have that, you know, did have a sort of threatened element to it. You know?
Well, good. That revolution
was
hard won.
I agree. It is good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time on the show today, Adam. I really appreciate your insight.
Sure. Hope to do it again soon.
All right, everybody. That is Adam Morrow. He's a reporter for Interpress Service. You know, Jim Loeb and Gareth Porter and all the heroes there at IPSnews.net. And he's reporting live from Cairo.